I'd like to welcome to Planet Waves FM Michelle Ford, who is involved in a kind of a legal movement out in California, which I'm curious about on behalf of my listeners. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thanks a bunch, Eric. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
So now you're involved in helping people become what is called a national. Is that, do I have that right?
Yeah, you sure do. A national, you know, a better way, I think, that really hits home for people, because national sounds so nebulous, but the word American, I think, really resonates for people. That is really the crux of it, is that we get to become Americans, the ones we always thought we were.
As opposed to what, though? What were we that we didn't know about?
Oh, this is juicy. So most people are citizens. And
yeah, that's what I thought I was, but I thought that meant being an American.
No, they're actually two completely separate statuses here.
Okay.
And actually, every country has this. You can either be of the land of your nativity, you know, like, so for me, I would be considered a Californian and an American, right?
Yep.
Or I could be a citizen, which is essentially property of the federal government.
More like a subject of the crown.
That's exactly right. Spot on.
In fact,
we have two governments really running the show here that have gotten overly, you know, overzealous, huge, insidious, and, you know, the employees have taken over. You know, they've taken over the country. So we still have a territorial British subcontractor in the, you know, doing government services. But we also have a municipal. So we have territorial and municipal. And those two government subcontractors, you know, started out at the federal level. And of course, well, really, they started out after the union got into an agreement known as the Constitution. We got into an agreement with the subcontractors to do government services. And then around the 14th Amendment is when they introduced this idea of, you know, being a citizen. And it got included into the vernacular in our most common Constitution. But really, it's not as simple as it seems. It's very layered. But to make it simple, in order to no longer be a subject of the crown, it's important to expatriate from that corporate citizenry and become a free, peaceful, lawful American.
Okay, let's just sum this up. And maybe, you know, maybe use a metaphor or such. What I hear you saying is that prior to the 14th Amendment, Americans were free and sovereign people. It sounds like what you're saying is that prior to the 14th Amendment, which was that in the like 1920s or something?
Oh, no, it was actually in the 1800s.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Right after the 13th Amendment, which is in the 1800s. Okay, so right after the 14th Amendment, the status of American people changed from being free and sovereign individuals to being kind of corporate entities of the state,
yes,
of the federal
correct.
Government.
That's correct.
Major change of status that I've hardly ever heard talked about.
Yeah, and you know, you brought up the 13th Amendment, and you're making me realize that it's important to talk about the 13th Amendment as well, because President Lincoln, you know, he's best known for freeing the slaves, right? That's one of his major accomplishments. And, of course, he also sort of paved the way for the future of what we know of as equality, right? So he ended and abolished private slavery. However, what happened because of the 13th Amendment was this sort of door opening for corporate enslavement instead. And so immediately after the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment did exactly what was intended, which was to, quote, create equality through citizenship, giving everybody this same status of being known as a citizen. And when you're a citizen and you're property of a corporate government, you know, it's like the rules apply to thee, but not to me, right? It's sort of like now the government, the subcontractor had a higher authority over its property. Whereas prior to that, people were free. They were free to be and operate the government. So the other thing that was notable about Abraham Lincoln is that he was a bar attorney. And, you know, we have we don't allow titles of nobility like Esquire. You know, you can't be an attorney and hold an office on the land jurisdiction. And when I say land jurisdiction, you know, you've heard of, I'm sure you've heard of maritime and admiralty law, right? That's why we have district courts and municipal courts. We also, you know, we have federal courts.
Most people don't know this. If I may give an example of what I believe to be maritime law operating on the land.
Uh-huh.
Just so we can keep people oriented, because these concepts can get really abstract. When okay. I wake up in the morning, I don't sign a document agreeing not to steal. But if I shoplift from a store, I'm subject to arrest. When I registered my car, I signed a form in New York called MV82, the vehicle registration form, which says I agree to operate this vehicle in accordance with the vehicle and traffic law of New York State, and I mm-hmm. sign on the dotted line, agreeing to a contractual relationship to, for example, not speed.
Ah, well, if New York is anything like California, and you really dig into the vehicle code, what you'll actually discover is that the vehicle code is a, you're actually agreeing to commerce. You're agreeing to commerce. Now, unless you're a taxi driver or an Uber driver, or you drive a big rig or an ambulance for a living, you know, something along those lines, then you're not engaging in commerce. If you're simply going from point A to point B, you know, to get to the market or pick up your kids from school or whatever, that's not engaging in commerce.
Right.
But this actually is towards the very, very, very end of the California Vehicle Code. It finally admits that everything up to that statement is that it's all commercial.
Okay, but I'm just wondering why I have to agree to I have to sign a contract that I'm going to obey that law rather than just merely being subject to it naturally. That's the distinction I'm making. You're saying that's a subset of being a commercial agreement, but I'm saying it sounds like the law of the sea where I agree to be thrown in the brig if I disobey the captain. And
right.
I give them permission to board my vessel. I give the pirates permission to board my vessel if they pull me over and all that stuff. By signing this form, MV82, it's like this 500-page contract that nobody ever read.
Right. That's exactly right. Well, and that's the thing, right? Because you signed it, you inherently gave up rights that were already granted by God to you.
Yeah.
You already had the right to travel freely.
Mm-hmm.
You already have the right to be anywhere that you're not causing harm to others or
mm-hmm.
their property.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of the corporate government creating rules and regulations whereby you limit your own rights, notice that it's voluntary. But because we're raised up in an environment where it just is the way that it is, you know, it's been over 160
mm-hmm.
years,
mm-hmm.
right? So it just is the way that it is. None of us were alive at the time where there were actually free people and then there were not free people,
mm-hmm.
right? Because people didn't become citizens overnight. So the 14th Amendment happened, but here's how it ended up becoming as pervasive as it is today. You know, back then, people would be born and then, you know, there would be perhaps a doctor, perhaps a family member, other witnesses, a midwife, who knows, the husband is there, and a baby comes into the world, and then they would write it in their family
Bible.
Religious book, yep. Right, their text, their Torah, right, whatever. It would just be recorded in the family Bible, and then the community, you know, there would be whoever the town crier is going, hear ye, you know, a baby was born to the Joneses on next to the oak tree. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And that was public notice, right? That there was a baby that came into the world. Well, after the 14th Amendment, it was still like that for a time. However, over the decades, what they've done is they've sort of corporatized the birthing process, and babies are mostly born in hospitals now. And what happens is then the hospital staff will give the mother and father a birth certificate application, which is almost like a coat check, right? When you check a coat into a fancy restaurant, mm-hmm. You know, they take your coat, actually physically they take your coat, and then they leave you with the receipt. The difference is with a birth certificate, they let you keep the coat, right? They let you keep the baby. But on paper, it appears as though, you know, you're just a parent now. You went from being a mother and a father, you know, your mothers and fathers, to being parents, and then your son or daughter became a minor.
And these are legal distinctions.
There's legal distinctions that apply to minors. So your baby is no longer just your son or your daughter. That's your right. Baby is actually a fictional entity known as a minor, subject to all of the rules and regs and codes and statutes and laws that apply to minors.
So you mean saying the certificate of birth is a contract that in enacts the 14th Amendment, whereby we give up our children's sovereignty and they
yes.
become, in effect, wards of the state.
That's exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. Very succinct. That's
I've been
exactly
thinking about this
happened.
Stuff for a while.
Now, well, and the other thing that happens yeah. too is, and most people don't realize that this is even going on, but the other thing that happens is, there are then three versions of the name of the newborn that get created.
Do tell. One
of them you just said, which is a ward of the state, and that's, you know, the first name and the last name in all capital letters. That's the ward of the state.
Like a corporation's name is written.
Exactly. All corporations, or, you know, almost all corporations. I've actually seen some now that are not all caps, which is interesting. But there's another version of your name, which is your foreign entity, and that one's your first name, middle name, and last name in all capital letters. We call that your trademark name. And then your domestic version of yourself, which is your first name, your middle initial, and your last name in all capital letters. So, you know, when someone takes an oath of office to defend the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, what they've done with this semantic deceit of your birth name, you know, your born name, is they've created a foreign enemy and a domestic enemy immediately, like upon the registration process of that birth certificate
enemy
application.
Enemy because you're an alien?
Enemy because basically you're foreign to the corporation. You are one of them. You're one of their property, but you're... you now, they just categorize you as an enemy. And actually, if you do any digging whatsoever into the Environmental Protection Agency and the different ways that they define, you know, humans, so to speak, right? Humans is a whole other semantic deceit. But anyway, you know, they define their citizenry as property of the state. It's very clear what they can and cannot do to you. And I mean, I use Waco as an example in a class that I teach on Thursdays because, you know, we saw what happened when the media decided, or whoever decided, I think it was the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, decided that these religious people were a threat, right? And then they descended and they destroyed the lives of all these people and mm-hmm. they killed them and they destroyed their houses and stole all their guns, right?
Flamethrowers and all that stuff.
The whole thing. I mean, I was a much younger woman at the time, but I remember watching on television and seeing the horror that was going on, and I was so confused. And of course, the narrative was that these people were dangerous to society. Well, that's what we're seeing today with the vaccine narrative.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you don't take the vaccine, then you're a danger to society. And the public health officer has, you know, more power than really God, it seems, because, and I'm joking, of course, nobody has more power than God. But my point is that in a popular sense, everyone appears to accept that this man or woman that was not elected, that has really zero true authority, has suddenly gained the trust of a majority of the innocent minds out there that have no idea what's going on, you know? And they've made enemies out of people. So now there's another split in society, another set of others, you know, to hate. And the divide and conquer technique is, you know, as ancient as, I mean, it goes way, way, way back, right? So
just to put this simply, though, I think that there may come a time in the life of every person where they figure out that they really don't have all these rights that we learn about in school.
Correct. Yeah, in fact, school, that's a whole other issue. School is designed to make sure that you, you know, you follow orders, you're obedient, you're part of the crowd, right? You do everything. You got to be the same as everybody, because if you stand out, you're weird and different. And so people conform naturally. Nobody likes to be embarrassed or look stupid, right? So everybody kind of conforms, and it continues this paradigm of deceit, frankly.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, a nod to my teachers, particularly Mrs. Ursula Fennelly in the fourth grade, and then all of my high school teachers who aided, abetted, and encouraged the independence of their students. So it may be a mean system, but my fourth grade teacher had us read 1984.
Wow.
And I'm rereading that now, and I'm thinking, wow, she would have been strung up for doing this today, given the content of, and she was old. She had to be 70. And she gave us 1984, and we discussed it, and we talked about totalitarianism. And then I went to an experimental public high school. So I know most people's experience of school is not this good. I know what you're talking about. The school-to-prison pipeline has now become the school-is-a-prison. Basically, schools have become prisons. And they,
you know,
except for John Dewey High School, they always were.
Yeah, I don't mean to laugh. It's like so uncomfortable. What's going on with the minds of our children? It's so unbelievable what they're getting away with. They're turning the children into like politicized, partisan, you know, mini combatants themselves. They're so, you know, I recently went down there because I was trying to help educate local parents about the schools, school boards and school districts' rules regarding equality, because they were attempting to segregate the unvaccinated children, right? And it was a mess because the kids, I was out there handing out flyers about the school's equality program.
What is that?
I know they have a program of inclusion and fairness, right? So I wanted I wanted the high schoolers there to know what inclusion was about, you know, and that the school actually has a rule about this, and how could the district be so partisan and treat the unvaccinated children so poorly, right? And demand masking and testing and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And this was obviously before the new year, but, It was really sad the way that the children, you know, many of them taller than me by that point, but they were kids nonetheless, and they were very combatants. And I was shocked. I was actually telling my kids when I got home that, wow, I would be appalled as a mother if I ever saw you behave the way that some of these kids were behaving. And I, expressed what some of these kids were doing, coughing in my face and doing weird, just, mean-spirited thing.
Who was, on what terms were they coughing in your face? Like, help me here. What was the scene?
Oh, well, there were other parents. I probably should have contextualized. There were other parents there that day that were opposed to the vaccine and also to the masking. And so there was somewhat of a, not really a rally. I think there was like 6 or 7 parents out there. And I went out there, not with any signs about vaccines or masks, but about the school's equality policy, and that I thought everybody should be aware that the school claims to be inclusive, yet they were they had made a very public stand to not be inclusive regarding this situation. And the superintendent of schools was on television promoting his, you know, quote, keeping everybody safe system. And he was on, he made it to CNN, which, of course, you know, very tongue in cheek. You know, you could probably feel how I feel about CNN
yes,
right
well,
now.
Yeah. But, another crisis actor. I've been wondering why, you know, how exactly they were able to order the entire country to wear a garment of a certain type, obstruct their breathing, and subject themselves to an injection. And we see now, if they know this set of rules, which I do know exists, if they know it and we don't, then they, of course, feel entitled to order us to do things under their rules that we don't know exist.
That's exactly right. And that's how they've been able to get away with it for so long, is because even lawyers, I mean, listen, you got to really get, I've talked to several lawyers who completely and totally poo-poo this entire situation.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a hard stop. No, that's impossible. And it's similar to when I used to try to approach doctors about vaccines. Because I really started out, by the way, as a health freedom advocate, because my oldest daughter was injured by her vaccines as a newborn.
Mm-hmm.
So a young infant.
The mere notion of injecting a newborn boils my blood.
Oh, it's just so sad, right? But we're also brought up in the safe and effective paradigm. Safe and effective, safe and effective.
Yeah, 24 hours and getting a Hep B vaccine.
Oh, it's pretty much immediate now. And they also do the vitamin K, which is an injection. And the two together, the Hep B and the vitamin K, in large numbers are producing, like they have a synergistic effect that's tampering with the suckling reflex of newborns. So there's like literally an epidemic of new mothers of newborns that the babies cannot nurse. Yeah. So there's it appears to be an intentional slow boil of continuing this idea of separating babies from their families, from their mothers, because listen, when that's a major bonding that happens between a mother and her child, mm-hmm. when the mother's nursing her child, mm-hmm. it just is a natural thing. But they're really, really pushing for formula feeding and lots of health complications that can happen with that. But they're having mothers doubt their own abilities, and it's a medical, it's a known medical thing that these two products are causing that.
Well, it's all of this seems to fall under the general heading of getting people to distrust their own physical being. All of the
Certainly.
Masking, the vaccines, the distancing, the terror of giving people diseases and getting diseases and killing grandma and children as super spreaders and all this stuff that my issue is the science behind all of this. I did what they said. I followed the science. And I know what a bunch of horseshit this all is. Unless you look at it spiritually, then it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
It, from their it point sure of does. View, to get people to distrust each other and themselves, and as 1984 says, to split man from woman, parent from child, etc.
That's exactly right. And at the end of the day, you know, you sound like you have enough knowledge in your toolbox there. I really do think, and it's so cliche to say it's a spiritual war, I actually really do believe that it is.
Oh,
and when we look,
yes, it is. Yes, you got that
back,
right.
All the way back to Adam and Eve, you know, ultimately God gave us a choice, right? God gave all of us a choice. And the ultimate choice is choosing between good and evil. But people today are not being taught
that they have what a choice. Signs of,
or the what the signs of evil are. We're raising our kids up in an environment where everything, anything goes. Oh, you're a boy and you want to be a girl? Perfectly fine. You know, oh, you want to engage in these certain sexual activities or do these illicit drugs, or you want to go bust up windows because you're pissed off? That's fine. You want to set buildings on fire? That's fine. Mm-hmm. If it's, quote, justifiable because of social norms, then there's so many blurred lines about what is good and what is evil from the perspective of a young person, right? Mm-hmm. A young boy or girl, mm-hmm. young son or daughter. It's like, how are they supposed to discern what's right from wrong when, you know, children today are engaged in the most illicit things? It's unbelievable what's going on. They have ready access to pornography at school.
What is that? Explain that to me. Are you saying that certain elements of sex education are pornographic?
Absolutely. Here in California, we have something called comprehensive sexual education. And it boggles the mind to a degree that it would just knock your socks off with what they're allowed to get away with in terms of teaching children at school. So, and by the way, it's an automatic opt-in. So unless a mother or a father knows that they have to opt their child out of that education, then it's just part of health class mm-hmm. or part of biology or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're going to talk about sodomy, and they go into great detail. I mean, great detail regarding foreplay and certain things actually are, from my perspective, like borderline satanic ritual abuse type stuff.
My question is, and sex education is a topic dear to my heart as a sex educator, how do we go from abstinence-only indoctrination, which was basically a product of the Heritage Foundation, to, well, okay, so here's one thing I know, that is that the federal government introduces this abstinence indoctrination in the early 1980s, but that California was the only state that had a law that said that all education, including sex education, had to be scientifically grounded. Therefore, California was the one state of the 50 that could not teach abstinence indoctrination. I think it's worth a good airing out. What is how do you handle teaching children about their sexuality before it's too late and they don't want to listen to anyone? But what you're saying is that there is this explicit kind of training in California.
Yeah.
It's an opt-in as a default.
Mm-hmm. You're automatically opted in. Yeah.
Okay. So,
well, how about this? One thing I'd like to say, because I was unaware that California had such a sort of status in the world of sex ed back, you know, in the beginning. but if everything had to be based on science, what about conscience? What about conscience? You know, how come there's no, how come abstinence isn't even really talked about as a viable option? They go into great detail. I'm talking about great detail about all the ways to do certain things, right? But they don't go into great detail about how to manage your feelings if you choose to be abstinent, or how to navigate the world when your friends are going off the rails doing a bunch of things that you don't agree with, and you're different than them.
Neither did the other 49 states, because in those states, or most of them, what was not taught was an option, but it was abstinence-only indoctrination. And if a child asked about masturbation, they were sent for counseling as a kind of mentally defective being. So the whole thing is just ridiculous. The whole sex ed status. Can we bring this back around to the status as a national? We're seeing some of the implications of basically our lives being signed away by our parents with a certificate of birth, essentially turning us all over to the state. With the hat check. they're checking our hat before we know we have one. And you're a specialist in getting out of that.
Yeah. Well, I can't use the word specialist technically because it's a title, but yeah, I do help people to not only comprehend what this means and really how it is the only way we're going to get our country back. But then I actually teach them how to do it. So, you know, it involves paperwork and it involves undoing contracts. And it involves, you know, being different than family and friends because it's such a complicated issue. But I believe that it doesn't have to be so complicated. Part of the reason why it's complicated is because the legal system, you know, not only is the legal system itself so filled with contradictions and so burdensome. I mean, you know, go to any law library and you're facing hundreds of books. And different precedents and different case law. And then you're dealing with statutes and codes and rules and regulations and ordinances and measures. And I mean, it gets so complicated.
To no end.
Yeah. I mean, attorneys have to have specialties because they can't possibly know it all, right? And never mind that the average Joe is supposed to know all of this stuff. We're probably breaking a law right now, just having a conversation about this, right?
Well, being friendly, that is illegal.
Yeah, there you go. So my point is that people shy away from this topic because it's so different than the norm. And then not only that, but it gets even more complicated because they think it has to run through the filter of legality in order to be considered valid and worthwhile and, you know, safe and effective, so to speak.
So what's the gain? Let's say someone, and I'm going to ask you about the process in a moment, but there is a process to go from being essentially a subject, ward, and citizen to a sovereign individual, which you're calling a national. What's the benefit of going through that and getting, you know, becoming that?
Okay, well, there are several benefits. Number one, you might remember the First Amendment of the Constitution.
I really do remember it, actually. I've got it memorized.
Yeah, so one of the things that we're allowed to do is assemble, right? It's already sort of written in stone, so to speak, because the Constitution is, I'll let you fill this in, the Constitution is the supreme law of the...
The land.
Okay. Well, we are allowed to assemble. Assembling means to restore something, rebuild something, or build something newly, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean just, oh, I can have a backyard barbecue, right? Or I can stand on the steps of my legislative building and beg for my rights, okay? It literally means rebuild or build. And so we're assembling. We can only assemble and restore our lawful republic from the status of being on the land jurisdiction. So being of the land. Mm-hmm. And so I know that sounds a little nebulous, but that's why it's contrary. It's totally distinct and different than the maritime or admiralty that we talked about earlier. The only way to have access to the constitutions is to be a party of the Constitution. And the only people that were parties to the Constitution were those that created it and those that had the same status as those men, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the contractors, which were the government workers that we essentially hired, the subcontractors we hired to help to build our infrastructure, give us safe passage across the high seas, right? We had to hire a government. We had to hire government workers to do certain things.
Sure.
We didn't have a navy when we first founded this country. So we got into a contract with the monarchy to help us. And through semantic deceit, you know, we were a union of, well, really we were colonies and then we were a union of states. But, and we were united because our lands touched each other, right? It would be similar to California touching Arizona, right? Our land was connected. So we were united with a lowercase u. We were United States. And so we were actually the United States of America. However, what ended up happening is our government contractors used the same name, only that it was a corporatized name. They actually corporatized it and copyrighted it in the all caps version. So we had the United States of America. We also ended up with the United States, and we also ended up with States of America. So if you really start digging, you'll find out we have multiple constitutions that are all very, very, very similar. But each one relates to its relationship between the living men and women that are we, the people on the land, and their corporate job description, so to speak. So that's why we know about the Supremacy Clause and that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. If it were to say the Constitution is the supreme law of the water, it would be so obvious that, you know, it relates to piracy and disallowing, you know, the overtaking of cargo ships and all that other stuff. But literally what's happening is inland piracy. And when former President Trump said, you know, our greatest problem is human trafficking, it's this. This is what he was talking about. He wasn't only talking about all of the children that are trafficked across borders and sold into sex slavery and all of that, but this identity theft, a corporate identity theft, taking the good names, the born names of sons and daughters, and encouraging this registry process does the exact same thing that you brought up earlier when you talked about signing the form at the, you know, your New York Department of Motor Vehicles. It was permission that you surrender your rights. Well, when mothers and fathers sign a birth certificate application and then it gets registered, well, really, once they sign it, the deal is done. But that process is giving the government permission to be the parent of the people, you know, of that people that was just born, that baby. So then that baby is no longer one of we, the people.
Right. It's like a student registered on a campus subject to the rules of the campus.
Correct.
Which can completely supersede the laws of the state.
Absolutely. Yep. All politics is local, they like to say, right? So, yeah, if a mother or a father registers their child into a school program or whatever, they're agreeing. By virtue of them signing up, they're agreeing to the rules and regs of that location.
Okay, so what is in two phases. First, what's the benefit of undoing this, and how do you claim those benefits?
Okay, so one of the benefits is, of course, and I just barely touched on it, it gives us the right to assemble and to assemble lawfully. So, you know, in our Declaration of Independence, our founding fathers told us that, you know, when our government gets out of control, because they knew this was going to happen at some point, right? It couldn't be all, you know, rainbows and unicorns, you know, into perpetuity, because they understand about that everybody had a choice between good and evil, and that evil would naturally find its way onto our shores, right? So, they said in the Declaration that when a government becomes tyrannical, it is our duty, it is our obligation, mm-hmm. right, to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so, but you cannot fix it from the perspective of being property of the thing that you're trying to fix. It's like trying to get out of a box, you know, by mm-hmm. yourself. Or even with a bunch of people that are all in the same box. You can't do it. You need help from the outside. You need someone to unlock the box and let you out, right? Well, we're taking ownership again of our rightful, lawful place on this land, and we are restoring our lawful de jure republic again. And all 50 states are actually participating in this movement. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it, you know, there's a lot of people that say, you know, there are plenty of teachers out there that talk about, oh, well, you're going to need to get trusts and you're going to need to do this and that. And we're actually encouraging not that. We're encouraging breaking free from all of those IRS vehicles, you know, mm-hmm. that are that help to reduce your taxes and do all this other stuff. Because one of the benefits when you're a free lawful American is you don't participate in the debt that the politicians create anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're not 14th Amendment U.S. citizens are the only people accountable to uphold the debt.
Well, the 14th Amendment has a curious line in it that the validity of the national debt shall not be questioned.
Right, exactly.
I never understood that. What was that? What's that? What does that mean?
Well, that means you're not allowed to question your employer about how much he or she is spending. You just got to keep working and paying the bill.
Oh, and hence mm-hmm. be permanently subjected to taxes to pay back the debts that they create.
That's exactly right. And that's why the two-party system, you know, and it's not unique to the United States. By the way, the United States being the corporation, right? There's America, but then there's the United States. The United States is the corporation. So when I say United States, I want to make sure that that part is clear. So United States is the nation, whereas America is the country.
Right,
so
there like are two legal proceedings say United States versus John Doe.
Correct. So the United States is that corporate entity. So the United States has a two-party system when it comes to politics. And most people, and by the way, I was stuck in this for a while. Most people are focused on, you know, getting certain people elected because, oh, these certain people are going to fix everything that's wrong. Or mm-hmm. they focus on lobbying, building relationships with their senators and assembly people and their Congress people, right? Oh, they're focusing on elections for the school board and for the city council and for the county boards of supervisors and for, you know, all of these agencies, but I mean, these bodies. But what we've come to learn is none of those matter because all you need is one Anthony Fauci to say, these are the new rules. Mm-hmm. And every agency, every business, practically, you know, all these electeds had no say. They had no say whatsoever. They had to do what the public health officer decided or was told to do by their higher up, which was Anthony Fauci or the people at the CDC. Mm-hmm. Now, the CDC is filled with a bunch of unelected people, too. It's an agency inside of HHS or FDA, or I kind of forget right now the hierarchy, but mm-hmm. it's essentially a branch off of the executive branch. Mm-hmm. And they have these almost unhindered wartime powers. And it's because after the Civil War, we never reconstructed America. Mm-hmm. All eyes turned to creating and emboldening the United States corporation. And so it's been an incredible, listen, I got to applaud these people. They, mm-hmm. they sure knew what they were doing. And, but they're not going to, you know, this house of cards is tumbling. It is tumbling fast. And I'm glad because we are going to get our country back and we are going to be the Americans that we were always taught we were in school. You know,
well, I'm concerned.
Go ahead. Of the people.
Mm-hmm. I'm concerned that the digital reality that's superseding all of this and the globalist reality that involves doing things like injecting people with writable graphene and having them be on the Internet of People is creating yet another corporate super government to which people are signing their lives away without recognizing it.
Right. Yeah. Well, I believe, you know, of course, it's not going to be an overnight success because as you can tell, it can take a lot of studying to really get to the point of being confident and moving, actually taking an action and moving forward. But I predict that what we're creating, and we're not even creating, we're restoring. So this is nothing new, right? We're just restoring the vision of our founding fathers. Okay. We're restoring the vision of America where all people are free. Anyone who chooses this country is free, mm-hmm. right? It's the nature of the country as opposed to the nation. But, mm-hmm. we will have the paradigm that everybody wanted in the first place. I say that people come here because, you know, not because we have better beaches, but because of our founding documents, and they think that's what they're going to get when they get here.
Mm-hmm.
But what ends up happening is there's a push for them to become citizens as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when they become citizens, suddenly they lose all their rights.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So besides the right to assemble, I mean, do you, and not participate in the debt structure, for example, does a national not pay taxes to the state governments and federal governments?
No. Well, it's a process, right? So I really want to be careful on this one, because sometimes people get overly excited and then they just like stop paying.
No, I'm not saying that. I understand has to be done correctly. And I understand you're saying there's two ways to do it. One way is to set up a trust and to detax, as it's called, and give up your Social Security number. Are you proposing something different from doing that?
Well, everything requires proper notice. So slightly different, yes. It used to be all of this surrendering of this and that and the other thing. But the fact of the matter is when you become a lawful American, you can choose. There are documents to file that actually give you ownership over those corporate names that they have created on your behalf,
mm-hmm,
without your permission.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whereas now you don't own them. That's why, you know, parents are, and I'm using parents on purpose, okay? That's why parents are concerned about child protective services, because they know at any minute, you know, oh, if they don't fall in line, CPS could come and take their kids away, right?
Yeah, well sure. And they seem to have unlimited jurisdictional power. That comes from the fact that the minor children are entirely wards of the state.
And they are, until the expatriation happens and taking ownership of those assumed names. We assume those names. We take those names and we own them, and that becomes part of the filings and public record and all of that.
So
the other thing we do is baby deeds, where we claim our children as ours, and that, you know, notices have to go to the Secretary of State and all of that, but it's all done with proper notice, giving, you know, if for any reason the de facto government, the government right now, refutes the claim, they have 61 days to refute the claim that these are your naturally born children. You know, like I had, mm-hmm, all four of my children. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're big now, but I have, you know, I have four children. They were mine. They're mine. Okay. Until the age of 21, in which case they can choose their own lives at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in my care, control and custody until they're 21. And it's all based on proper notice.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes tongue in cheek will ask people, because they'll say, wait, don't you need permission? And I'm like, do you need permission to die?
Permission. Right. Permission, though. Permission to do what?
To be free. Don't you need permission?
Well, that's a contradiction,
like, no,
isn't it? I mean,
it's
convoluted, because how do you get permission to be free? You, all throughout the early founding documents, you read about how the rights we have we're born with them, and the purpose of the Constitution is to limit the rights of the government. All the ten articles of the Bill of Rights are limitations on the rights of government.
Right, that's exactly right. You totally really grasp this, and I love that. So it would be oxymoronic, just to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, it would be oxymoronic to have to get someone else's permission to be free.
Mm-hmm.
Although, when people ask that, that question alone demonstrates that they recognize that they're not free,
mm-hmm,
despite learning in school, oh, you know, you're lucky, you're free, you're American, you have the highest authority in the world, this is a unique country, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, all of that is actually true if you're one of them, if you're one of the free Americans. It's not true if you're one of the corporate citizens.
Right. Now, I'm wondering where the distinction actually enters. Where being one or the other, and how do you prove one or the other when the time comes?
I'm so sorry. Can you say that again?
Okay, let's say I've succeeded. I haven't asked you the process to exactly go through and upon whom I serve notice, hypothetically. Mm-hmm. But in the end, what is the material difference in my daily life and conducting of business? And raising children. Okay. I don't have children, but also in my you know, prerogative as a parent.
Well, it really resets your authority, and it puts you back into the position of being an employer, so to speak. Now, we are still interim, which means we have not restored our lawful government yet. We're still in the process of doing that. So we're sort of in this in-between world of where things around us are still very corporate. You know, there are here in California, there are approximately 900 of us altogether, but only about 100, a little less than 100, that are actively, very actively engaged in doing the government work, like actually being government workers in our de jure republic to restore the California assembly, our lawful government, right? Mm-hmm. With that being said, though, we are very, very close here. And again, all 50 states are doing this, and I don't have a full pulse on all the other states. I know Florida is very, very far along. But once we get to the point of our jural assembly being standing, our jural assembly needs still 25 more qualified jurors, and qualified jurors are properly status corrected and have hold no titles in the de facto world.
Mm-hmm. You mean doctor, esquire, senator,
correct.
Congressman, commissioner, judge,
yep.
Whatever.
That's exactly right.
They can't
right.
be compromised. They must be sui juris, I guess, in a sense,
yep.
in that they haven't signed away their right to challenge the corporate jurisdiction.
Correct.
And so, one last thing. When you talk about sure. the de jure government, you don't mean the thing that's in City Hall or the State House. You mean an actual on-the-ground government of the people and by the people, not of the bureaucracy and the administrative state.
That's exactly right. You're spot on. That's exactly what I mean. Yeah. But in fact,
yes.
just to demonstrate, I mean, I invite your listeners to go down to their local city hall and go look at the council chambers. And behind the seat of the mayor's spot is going to be the city seal.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, probably more than that, it's going to say the city of fill in the blank. And
Kingston,
then it's going to be incorporated in such and such a year.
Sure.
Now, it's been hidden in plain sight this whole time because we've never thought to question the fact that it's a corporation. But if it instead of the title being the city of blank, what if it said Amazon?
Let me tell you something funny.
Yeah.
When I went to file the corporate papers for Planet Waves Incorporated, when I got to the state corporate filing office in, I forget what the capital of Washington is, it said, do you want to be an LLC, a DBA, a corporation, a town, a village, a city? I'm thinking, well,
right.
Why not just be a city? I mean, so you could actually go to the state filing office and say, I'm incorporating as a state. I don't know what would happen next, but it was on there, and I personally got a kick out of it. And I chose corporation.
That is so fascinating.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It might be. I will see if I can find out from the Washington Secretary of State if I can get a copy of that form. But it's like, wow, this is funny. So, yes, they are corporations. That much is, I think, plainly obvious. Is the county
so
a corporation?
Great. Yes, it is.
So all of these levels of government, whether it's the village of New Paltz and the town of New Paltz and then the county of Ulster, the state of New York, these are all corporate entities filed with whom?
Well, many of them have what's called a Dun's number, a Dun and Bradstreet number. But
can't anyone get that, though? Can I get that from my motorcycle
oh, yeah.
repair shop?
Yeah, you can. Any business that's incorporated has to have their their corporation paperwork transparent to the public. So if you can't seem to find it, because when you go on and you start searching, you'll realize that their search features include every word that you include in your search. In fact, you know, normally, like on Google, if you type in something very specific, that specific thing is usually going to be almost at the top, right by the ads. You know, usually the paid advertising is at the very, very top. But you'll find, like, the thing, if you type it in exactly. Well, when you're searching for corporate records, you could type it in exactly, and it's not, you're not going to get it. I've actually done this, and it's exhaustive work because, you know, I was looking for the city of Los Angeles, right? And the county of Los Angeles. And oh my word, every business that was in the city of Los Angeles and the county of Los Angeles that was incorporated, they all came up. Mm-hmm. So it's exhaustive work to try to parse through. It's probably easier to do a public records request of your local city or your local county to ask them, what is their DUNS number, or what is their, you know, where can you see their corporate tax returns or something like that? Mm-hmm. It would probably be easier to get it that way.
Mm-hmm. So here, but here's where I'm left right now. I'm feeling like, okay, so from the standpoint of, you know, someone listening, what is really the distinction of the difference of having gone through this process, which I'd like to at least touch on briefly, but what in practical daily reality?
Gosh, well, again, right now we're interim, so you're not really going to see that much difference.
Okay,
right,
fair
now.
Enough. I mean, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
But it's a spiritual and legal and spiritual shift of ground.
Yeah. One of the things I can tell you, though, along those lines, the spiritual, you know, shift, is that I no longer fear the government.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer fear, you know, Child Protective Services. I no longer fear the IRS or the Internal Revenue Service, for that matter.
Are they two different things?
Yeah, there's two different entities. One is on the creditor side, and one is on the debtor side. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. And then there's also the Department of the Treasury, to whom you write your checks.
Correct. Right. And then each state has its franchises for the taxation. So, like, California has the Franchise Tax Board, but it's just a franchise of the IRS or the Internal Revenue Service.
Mm-hmm.
So, so I no longer fear these tax agencies. I no longer fear the, quote, you know, permit people at the city. I recently needed a new driveway, right?
Mm-hmm.
And thought, okay, well, normally, back in the olden days, I would have gone to city council, to city hall, and gone to the permit office, and I would have asked them, hey, do I need a permit for this? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, yes, fill this out, which is, you know, by virtue of signing a permit application, you're engaging in a contract again. And then I would have paid the permit fees. And then I would have had to hire a licensed contractor. Right. And this is all on my own property. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have had to jump through all these hoops just to get, you know, this in the area of my driveway that was cracked and making it impossible. You know, I needed to get a fixed driveway. I would have gone through all of this rigmarole just to get a new driveway. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, so I didn't do any of that. And if I do get questioned, like, hey, we noticed you have a new driveway, well, I have all the paperwork to support that I'm allowed to do that. And thank you very much. Have a nice day.
And then, I mean, then of course it would be game on, right? Then they could try to find a, you know, something, right? I mean, right.
They could, but because of my status, they have no right to do that to me because I have not harmed anybody or anybody's property.
Mm-hmm.
I'm allowed, you know, listen, if I want to paint my car, you know, fuchsia, I can if I want to.
But where would that be litigated? What if they said you violated city ordinance number 26, which says you have to have a permit to put in your driveway, and they just slap you with municipal fines for failure to get the permit? Then what do you do?
Well, then I would fight jurisdiction, because I would just fight the jurisdiction. They would have misidentified me most likely by putting my name in all caps without seeking the owner of that name, which now is me. It used to be the city, or the state, I mean.
Okay. So,
and the federal government. But now that I've done the proper documentation and have done proper filings and proper public notice, and the government, all these levels of government, have had ample time to refute my claims over my life and over my ownership of my name. And I've had no refutes. I've had no, in fact, I got a letter from the Attorney General on California saying, well, technically he's the Attorney General of the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
And the letter was like, well, we can't help you if you need anything, but if you find that you need an attorney, you know.
They just picked the closest approximate form letter because they didn't know what they were looking at.
Yeah, they in case you ever find that you need legal help, well, then here's the website that you go to find a qualified attorney.
And you serve this by certified mail return receipt? Is that how you do that?
Uh-huh. So it's all an administrative process, yeah.
Right. Okay. Very briefly, what is involved in this?
Well, very briefly, it's a set of paperwork. Including two witness testimonies of a man or a woman that has known you for at least 7 years, who could testify on paper in the presence of a notary that they've known you for at least 7 years and that you they know the place where you were born. And then you also need a physical copy, not a photocopy, but like a physical birth certificate from the vital records, right? Mm-hmm. Of the state where you were born. So you need that. And then you, there's notary charges, which are minimal. And then there's the publishing charges, because you have to do public notice. And the publishing charges are, I think it's $3 per document on California. It could be different depending on the state you're on, because the people decide the charges, not, you know, there's no government entity that determines the charges. So we just changed ours from $25 to $3. So you do the public notice, and then you have to mail in by registered mail return receipt to certain agencies, including the Attorney General and the Secretary of State. And then if you get to the point where you're ready to convert your business from a corporation to a privately owned business, then there's a whole process of filings for that, of undoing the corporate ties. Mm-hmm. Most people start corporations because of tax benefits and because of, quote, liability protection.
Mm-hmm.
But liability applies to citizens and persons and individuals and residents, which are all corporate terms that have been codified by Congress. So liability doesn't exist the way that we have been brought up to recognize that word. But here we are upheld to a higher standard of do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't harm others. Now, is there a possibility of having an accident in an automobile? You bet your bottom dollar there is. So we support either that you've got the financial wherewithal to remedy harm that you've, if you're potentially at fault for something, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've either got to have the financial wherewithal to be able to restore someone back to wholeness, or many people are choosing to keep their driver's license as an active, you know, they're aware that they own the name now, and so they're keeping their driver's license in order that they could also keep and maintain insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a choice. Now, if you get into an automobile accident as an American and you end up choosing to agree to a court case, right? Let's say, I'm just going to give an example. Then you can't walk in there and go, I'm a free American, I'm a free American, because in that moment you were operating as a, quote, licensed driver, mm-hmm, right? So you're operating mm-hmm. under the agreements of that licensed drivership. So there are things that you have to be fully, fully cognizant of and aware of before terminating contracts. And so we certainly can't tell people what to do or not to do. Once you're free, you're free. And again, we can only let you know that do no harm to people or property. But other than that, people are free to cancel certain contracts or stay engaged from a place of being fully aware mm-hmm. of what they're choosing to do and deal with the consequences that come with that if necessary.
So in a sense, this serving notice on the state is laying the groundwork for the future.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's making sure that you're tidy in your actual status as a person of the American continent, not the corporate United States.
That's correct. Uh-huh.
Right.
Think of it like this,
yes,
too.
Yes, please do.
One little example that might kind of make it a little bit more easy to understand is, you know, there were people that were native to this land before the settlers came, right? So there were Native Americans. And pretty much all laws now that get passed have some sort of accommodation for Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they mostly relate to tribes that are federally recognized, mm-hmm. right? So these tribes have to file and be actively engaged in the corporate structure in order to be recognized. But that was because in a certain sense, they got corporatized in order to be able to trade for these exemptions and various enumerated rights. Well, it would be as if we are native to America without having gone through that corporatization process that they've found themselves in, mm-hmm. you know, now the Native American tribes are actually very engaged in politics and, you know, they're going down this corporate road in order to deal with all that's been happening to them. I mean, they were subjected to, being put on reservations and having land stolen from them. And you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Horrible evils, that were imposed upon them. And so they've chosen to kind of put one foot in the ring with these corporations, corporate government, in order to navigate, you know?
Got it.
But
right.
we're somewhat like Native
Americans. I often wonder how, you know, how it is that I ended up being born a free person and then like subject to a million different jurisdictions imposed on me.
Yeah, well, now you have the answer. That's how it happened. They actually took you from being a living son to being a person, literally. A mm-hmm. person is a corporate fiction.
Right.
And it's codified. So,
that's what's meant by the term a United States person?
Correct.
Right. Okay. Because a United States person means a subject of the United States Incorporated.
Well, technically the citizen is what opens the door for the person to be codified as well. But yeah, you've got it.
Mm-hmm. How do we reach you?
Same,
is there a way to contact you?
Yeah, actually there is. Because this is happening countrywide, I will give you the website with the contact button on there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on California, so if anyone needs to reach me specifically, they would go to the California contact on the website I'm about to give you. But other than that, they can contact their state coordinator if they need more information about how to get involved on their own state. But the website is TASA, T like Tom, A like Apple, S like Sam, A, which stands for the American States Assembly. So it's TASA.AmericanStateNationals, with an S at the end, .org. So So it's tasa.americanstatenationals.org. And I encourage people to go there, check out the chart your course or correct your status tabs and do a little bit of reading. Also, there's the fiduciary of this whole, the brainchild, I'll say, the author, prolific author and historian, who is of the not only the mindset, but has the education and knowledge, and she knows world history like nobody I've ever met. Her name is Anna Von Reitz, and she has a Monday night webinar, and the link is on that TASA site. And you can join it Monday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And, you know, the biggest complaint I get about her is that her stories take too long to tell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So webinars may not be the perfect place for people to do their immediate learning. But, mm-hmm. but you know, she gives a webinar every Monday night and gives sort of, it's almost like a weekly State of the Union.
Right.
But we really are the State of the Union. You know, we really are the Union. When the de facto president gives a State of the Union, he's actually giving a State of the States,
mm-hmm.
A State of the States, a state of the corporation, it might as well say, whereas ours is the Union of States.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. I get where you're going with this.
Great.
I can make this story short. In the early 1990s, I had some friends who were involved with this kind of what you might call like constitutional rights restoration. They had a different name for it. I think they thought of themselves as sovereigns.
Mm-hmm.
And they were studying constitutional law. One of them worked at IBM and got them to stop taking income tax out of his pay, which is really strange, right? That when you're an employee, they just automatically take money out of your check.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not really responsible for it till April 15th. If you're not required to file quarterly, in which case you just file quarterly, you should get your whole paycheck and then you settle with the government, not with the government through your employer. Anyway, I knew these guys, and so one day I get a speeding ticket for 37 and a 30.
Mm.
And I pleaded not guilty. And then about a week later, I had this dream that there were all of these pipes and wires and conduits under the courthouse. I had this kind of cross-section view of the courthouse in this dream, where there were all these pipes and wires, right? There were all these unseen connections of the local criminal court. And right around that same time, I had been thrown off the State University of New York at New Paltz campus for being a public menace, which meant being a journalist. They claimed that I was like disturbing the peace, and they declared me persona non grata.
Oh, my word.
And I got in all the papers, right? It was the best thing that ever happened to my journalism career was getting that letter. And this guy, Chris, walks up to me, a very proper, you know, formal-ish guy about 6 or 7 years older than me, says, "You're the persona non grata." That was Chris McGregor. All this right around the same time. I mentioned to Chris that I've got this speeding ticket that I 37 and a 30, right? Not like 90 and a 30, 37 and a 30. That I had pleaded not guilty. And he said, "Well, in fact, your arraignment was, your plea was defective because you were not informed of your right to counsel at arraignment, and you waived arraignment. You waived the most important step of the process, which is submitting to the jurisdiction of the court." "Oh, that's interesting," I thought. "Well, then," I said, "well, what do I do?" And he said, "Well, let's write a motion." So we wrote a motion to withdraw the plea in part one as being defective, in part two, pursuant to, I think, New York 120/20, which says that there is no personal jurisdiction when the underlying matter is a simplified traffic information, i.e. a speeding ticket. So I write this letter, and it begins, you know, in propria persona, sui juris, I, Eric Coppolino, am appearing for special purposes only to contest the jurisdiction of the court. This is a special appearance, meaning me appearing at the window, not the courtroom. And I enumerate my motion, and I say that the plea is defective and that they don't have personal jurisdiction rights over me, nor do they have any other. And I cite all the parts of the law, and I sign the give it note. It's all done perfectly tidy, and I submit it. And the judge lost his mind. And he fills out what he called a long form information, forgetting the fact that the word underlying is in the law. The underlying matter remained a simplified traffic information. And I'm now, he somehow, I didn't miss a single court appearance. I'm filing paperwork. He somehow tries to find me in contempt, and he signs an arrest warrant.
What?
Wait, it gets better. Whoa. So me and Chris are sitting in the mobile station parking lot, and we find ourselves surrounded by the police. He was known as the cop watcher at that time. He had a video camera on him long before it was popular. It was about 100 times the size of an iPhone. And we're like, well, let's see what's up. And we get out of the car, and he starts videotaping, and I'm placed under arrest. And I'm brought to the police station where I called my lawyer, who 11 o'clock at night comes speeding across the flats in New Paltz, puts on a suit and comes in. I said, you cannot arraign me. I have a right to an attorney at arraignment. They ignore it. They go right over it. My attorney walks in just as judge's walking out. And they take me to the county jail, where they proceed to ask me the same question 50 times, like six questions asked each 50 times. My friends have long since bailed me out. Well, I finally get out, you know, like at 5 o'clock in the morning. And after I recovered, took a couple of days to settle down, I wrote a motion to dismiss in the interest of justice, saying this is now a complete travesty. All I did was file a motion. There was no justification to file an arrest warrant and take me in and send me to jail. I didn't. All for 37 and a 30, where I was already responding. I was participating in their little game.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to filing that with the court, I sent it to the Commission on Judicial Conduct. And he was removed from the bench.
Wow. Good for you.
Rexford Schneider.
Wow, that's impressive, Eric.
I even
honestly
like the guy. I nothing against him. He was funny, but he was a jerk. And that's it. He wasn't judge anymore.
Wow. I bet he'll never forget that moment.
He's gone. But he had been on the bench since I was 1 year old.
Okay.
And he was a house painter. So he didn't have, not that I don't believe in non-law trained judges. I think we need a balance of those. They shouldn't all be lawyers, but he didn't have real good comprehension of the law. And I was not supposed to know. There were a couple of complaints that got him thrown off, and I was not supposed to know that mine was one of them. But one of the lawyers in the community who saw the report said, yep. So,
wow.
And I've had a lot of fun filing parking ticket jurisdiction challenges also, because the parking ticket is a fucking joke, where they serve your vehicle with a piece of paper and then they claim to be able to take your $50,000 whatever Subaru or Rote whatever Ferrari and for a nickel infraction, right? Because you could remedy the infraction for a nickel, right? Just put the nickel in the meter, and you get the extra 5 minutes that they can't write the ticket. We had fun doing this. I'll tell you that. I learned a lot. We had fun. I don't necessarily recommend it. It's a big pain in the ass. There were some very funny moments, though. I mean, while I've got you, while everyone's listening. So I filed this one. You're going to love this one. I just can predict this. So I filed a I was I had my old station wagon, Jose's taxi, impounded for something like 13 parking tickets in the village of New Paltz.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So they take my car and they then say that if you enter a plea and post bail in the amount of the tickets, you get your car back. So of course I did this, but then knowing what I know, I said, first of all, that plea was defective. I did not have legal representation, and you can't take ransom for a plea. And I've got a copy of this motion. I've got to dig this out and put it on the internet. So I file a motion with the New Paltz court. New Paltz wisely recused themselves. This is post Rexford Schneider. They already knew I had gotten rid of the previous judge in the New Paltz court. So New Paltz recuses itself.
We don't want to mess with this.
So they send it to another. They send it to another town, and now it's me, I'm going without a lawyer, in propria persona, sui juris, making special appearances only to contest the jurisdiction of the court, and they have me making a series of appearances. And the village attorney in the village of New Paltz is somehow representing the government. And right away, I'm like, is this a special counsel appointed by the governor? Like, why isn't the district attorney prosecuting me? What the hell has the village attorney got to do with this? Well, they're like, well, forget about it. So this goes on for a while, and finally, there's one court appearance where I said this proceeding is unlawful. You have, and they said, why? And I said, well, right in the beginning of the state constitution, it says I have a right to the nature and cause of the accusation. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's true. So I said, well, what jurisdiction am I in, civil or criminal? And the village attorney says, civil. And the judge says, criminal. And
criminal.
I said, see, you guys can't even agree on what jurisdiction I'm in. So the judge loses his mind again. He's shuffling the papers around on the desk, and he says, you know what I think? I think you're guilty. And I said, you rendered a judgment before trial. That is prejudicial. And he says, go talk to an attorney. So I called my friend up and I said, Steve, I'm told to talk to an attorney. Hello, goodbye, click. So I come back the next week with a motion to recuse and a motion to dismiss for prejudice. And the judge grants the motion to recuse. He does not want to be on the case. And the town attorney is so annoyed. He's like, no, judge, don't do this. So now it gets sent back to county. Then it's sent to a third court. This time I got a law-trained judge. This time it worked out. I get a law-trained judge, and I again said, I had parking tickets. They took my car for ransom. They required me to enter a plea without an attorney present to enter the jurisdiction of the court unlawfully. And the judge grants the motion. he grants the motion. And he says, you cannot take ransom to get a plea out of a person. And he sends it back to county yet again. And so there it gets sandbagged. I file with the county court. I file a motion to dismiss with the county court, demanding back my $130. and then like it just disappears. And that the term for that back in the day was sandbagging. They just sandbag you. But I'm like, well, who learned more and had more fun? I raised my hand.
Yeah, you're like, I did.
So, you know, the thing is, you have to get in the game to learn how to play the game. Really,
well,
one way or the other, you have to get on the ice.
Well, you know, it's interesting because although, listen, I applaud you for not only for your knowledge and your wherewithal and that you had the gumption to take action and be, you know, really being assertive and sort of taking the driver's seat, so to speak, mm-hmm. in that situation, or those situations, I should say. And the de facto system is not going away overnight. So mm-hmm. your knowledge is actually very, very valuable and will probably prove to be very valuable until, you know, your state assembly is up and functional. But once the state assembly is up and functional, which leads me back to something I forgot to finish earlier about, you know, we need 26 total qualified jurors per state. And then we need the jural assembly seats to be filled, namely having a justice, a coroner, a bondsman, a sheriff, a marshal at arms, a court clerk, you know,
I'll
a record keeper, a treasurer.
I'll be the coroner. There, yeah. I volunteer.
Yeah. Well, once we have a functional jural assembly, then we can invoke something called Ex Parte Milligan. And once we have Ex Parte Milligan in place and all of the proper offices have been put on notice, then that means the other courts literally have nothing to do with us anymore. It literally closes the door. The jurisdictional boundary would be set in stone from here to eternity mm-hmm. until our country accidentally falls for the semantic deceit again and, you know, enslaves ourselves in another 1,000 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, I'm going to look into this in New York. It's certainly exciting, and it is really an exercise in civics of the highest order.
Oh, it certainly is. And one thing to note about that is that, you know, they stopped teaching civics in school, I think, in the early 80s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And they also stopped teaching American history, and instead they replaced it with U.S. history. So, you know, you're absolutely right that it would be that. It would be that, and once this really starts to catch on, it won't be a matter of a majority rule situation, right? It'll be a matter of, like, getting to that, oh my gosh, the word just went right out of my brain, where, you know, you get to that critical mass. That's the word. You get to critical mass, and it's like a paradigm shift. And you don't need a majority. I think you need something like 7%
mm-hmm.
of the people to be aware. Now, countrywide, there are approximately 1 million that have either begun the process or are somewhere along the pathway of getting this done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty significant number. And, you know, I jokingly say that there was that whole Q phenomenon from mm-hmm. a few years ago mm-hmm. where they were talking about this thing called the Great Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, that has to be what this is. All these people are waking up to the semantic deceit. They're waking up to the fact that all they have to do is choose freedom. Because when you step outside of the jurisdiction of tyrants, they have nothing to do with you anymore. You're not theirs. You're not their property. It doesn't belong to you. It's sort of like, you know, do I vote for the board of directors for the NFL? No, I don't, because mm-hmm. I'm not part
mm-hmm.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not party to that. So I don't vote in their system anymore. Their laws have nothing to do with me or my family. And it's freedom. It's actually the true access to freedom, which I think at the end of the day, everybody wants that. And that's why we have so many immigrants flooding, you know, not to use a pun there, like flooding our land.
Well, I think they may be more enthusiastic about the American ideal than Americans are. And that's why they're so feared by the
right.
system.
Yes, they are. They are feared. And it's because we have the highest authority. We do have the highest authority. And by the way, I don't know if you know this or not, but when Americans are properly status corrected and they have a functional jural assembly in their state, then they can actually start pulling and nullifying corporate charters of corporations that are harming people within
mm-hmm.
their borders.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can think
really,
of a few that I'd like to nullify.
I'm sure. I mean, California alone is a hotbed of corruption. And so I can't wait until we get to that point because it's simply nullifying their charters for harm.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, this has been fantastic. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes. I'm grateful to have the opportunity, you know, to speak about it and to share that there really is a solution out there
mm-hmm.
and everybody can have it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll be in touch soon. And this has been great fun.
Amen. Thank you, Eric. What a great pleasure. I hope to talk to you soon, and I'd love to get the link so I could share it around.
I'll have it as soon as it's ready.
Awesome. Right, okay, great. Take good care. Thank you, Eric.
Bye for now.